We're continuing in the Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, where we left off in the middle of the 41st chapter. Rabbi Eliezer Omnim Yom Shiatu Yisemni Mitzrayim Yonosim Mechonim Bamachloket. Rabbi Eliezer says, from the day we left Mitzrayim, every time we camped, every time we started traveling, we were arguing. Oh boy. Shneimar, as the verse says, Vayisu, Vayachanu. They traveled, they camped. The Pasuk is saying in plural, Vayisu. They weren't united. There were masses traveling. I'm not talking to him, and he's not talking to me, and I don't agree with him, and he doesn't agree with me, and we're separate people. Yeah, we're all traveling, but vayisu, every time our traveling and our camping is described in multiple sense, because we weren't united. Achibau kulam na'al Sinai, till we all came to Mount Sinai. And there it says, v'chanu keneged ahar, where we camped opposite the mountain. And they knew that this was a special place when they came there. Shenemar, that the Pasuk stresses there, Vayichan Sham Yisrael Neged Ahar, that the Jewish people camped in unity opposite the mountain. They unified because they were recognizing that this is the place that would get the yoke of heaven. Moshe told them, as God had told him, when God first appeared to him at Sinai in last week's parasha, when God appeared through the burning bush, Tavdun et ha'alokim b'makom hazeh, Hashem said to Moshe, you will serve Hashem here on this mountain. So they knew they were coming to a special place, so they prepared themselves, and preparing oneself is uniting. Where do we have this concept? Yom Kippur. When we're coming to the holiest day, how do we begin? We begin by permitting all the sinners and everyone, all the gangsters could come into shul. Yesterday we had issue with them. Tomorrow we're still going to have issue with them, but today we all unite. When it comes to accepting the yoke of heaven, so the Talmud tells us, kol tanit, any fast day that does not have the sinners, the gangsters, the bandits, the problematic people are not part of it. That means the Jewish people aren't all. They're problematic, right? We try to solve our problems. But they're also part of the Jewish people, and they have to be there, otherwise we're not united. Yes? That's what we're matil. Let him ask his local Orthodox rabbi. But technically, that's what we're doing on Yom Kippur. Anu matirim lehitpalelim avaryanim. That's what we're saying. We're permitting ourselves to pray with them. Yeah.
So it doesn't make sense if we say Vayanusu, because they came from Mitzrayim, and they were 12 tribes, they were 12 different families, and in the end, it's Torah that unites us. So without Torah, we are not united. Even with Torah, alabai. But still, it's Torah that make us united, because we're 12 different families. No?
You're assuming that the 12 different families is what make us divided. And Chazal didn't view it that way.
Okay, it seems like I'm saying that. I'm also saying that. But I'm saying that since we had a traumatic experience in Egypt, and we were out of home for 210 years, and Torah makes us united. Makes us the we have laws when it comes to Makom and when it comes to Chaverot.
Chazal viewed it as a shortcoming of the Jewish people that we weren't united until that point.
We're like other nations.
So, no. Let me quote to you something. It says in the Maharal. But I'm going to quote it to you from a very infamous person. His name is Hitler. Hitler said, if there would be no synagogue, no rabbi, no Jewish thought, but one child who was born a Jew, without being taught a word, his soul would still be Jewish. And Hitler said it obviously derogatorily, but Hitler said like this, I feel bad that I'm quoting him, but if I quoted the Maharal, so you'd say, okay, the Maharal said it. That's how he viewed the Jewish people. Wait. What did Hitler say? He said, the whole idea of a conscience is a weakness that the Jews created. The whole idea that there is morality is a weakness that the Jewish people created. And I have come, they call me a barbarian, I'm proud to be a barbarian. I'm quoting. You know, I could give you the quotes. You could find them easily online. But Hitler said, I will only succeed if I eradicate every single Jew, because if there's one Jew that's left that's born, even if he has no one to learn from, and no books, and no synagogue, but there's one Jewish child that's left, that child can be the spark that will undo everything I do. Hitler said it, not me. You guys can see it written. Oh, so no. So Chazal, that's where I'll go back to the Maharal. Lavdil ben HaKodesh uven HaTameh. The Maharal says no. It's from that's what the Medrash, the Pirkei Rav Lezer, also says, that before creation, the concept of Avraham Avinu already existed, and Avraham Avinu already implanted in the world concepts. And there's more to say about that. That's what we started in our first class in Jewish philosophy. If you aren't following, we started a new series, Jewish philosophy. That the Kuzari begins with another concept, the concept of a conscience that exists before the recognition of God. Let's leave all that. According to the Maharal, that doesn't seem that way. And at any rate, I think that Chazal teaches that unity is a positive trait and divisiveness is a fault. And it was a fault of the Jewish people. And Chazal viewed the unity of the people of the Tower of Babel as an asset. Aye, they weren't Jewish. Aye, they were united to do something bad, but they were united. And Chazal said, whenever you have unity, even if it's sinners, at the end of the day, God has a great respect and a great affinity for people who are united, even for a bad cause. Unity is something God values, and I don't think we should try to whitewash our shortcomings. We, the Jewish people, have a shortcoming, which we have to work on till today, and that is the capacity to unite.
Isn't
and
the problem
what?
Isn't the problem recognizing in front of Queen, like sometimes people talk on the news and in websites?
No, so that's another concept. We don't go publicizing that. That's no one's business. That's our job here in Mohammed. It's what we have to work on.
Right.
It's not everyone else's business. I assume that our viewers are primarily Jewish.
No, I'm not saying about the internet. Sometimes people, when it comes to say Torah and Hillel and they have classes,
it's not, you're right. That's, so that, let's discuss in the question and answers. It's a different topic. Yes?
Follow up from that, but it means also that the tribes weren't really something divided.
I didn't say they were divided. There are different strengths among the Jewish people. In every family, different children have different natures and different strengths. In every people, you have the accountant, you have the lawyer, you have the doctor. Doesn't mean they have to oppose one another. They complement one another. Amalim. So God said to the Jewish people, Mekablim atem ta Torah? Are you accepting the Torah? Amru chulam pe'echad. They all said in unison, Ad shelo nishma ta Torah, anu shomrim osin kol mitzvot ha'aktuvot ba'Torah. Even before we hear what it says, we accept the responsibility of doing everything, watching and performing all the mitzvot that are written in the Torah. Shenemar, as the verse says, Vayomeru, they said prior to the receipt of the Torah, Kol ha-devarim asher diber Hashem nasev nishma. Whatever Hashem said, we're going to do, we're going to obey. Rabbi Elazar Modai omer, Miyom shenivru shamayim haaretz nikra Hashem har Chorev. Originally, from the beginning of creation, the mountain was called Mount Chorev. That's the name of the mountain. That's the ancient name. Uchshenigla Kadosh Baruch Hu al Moshe mitoch hasne, and then when Hashem appeared to Moshe from within that bush, that cactus that's called a sne, so then that mountain, in honor of that vision of the that appeared in the sne, al Shem hasne nikra Sinai. It was called Sinai because of the sne. Yes. Chovav, no? Not Chorev. Tro Yeter Chovav. Chovav. I don't think so. Chaver also. Keini. Yeah, but not. I don't think Chorev. I don't think so. Hu Chorev. So Sinai is really Chorev. Umenayin shekiblu aleihem et haTorah b'har Chorev. How do we know that the place where they originally received the Torah was Mount Chorev? Shneimar, as the verse says, Yom Hashem Amad Lifnei Hashem Elokecha b'Chorev. The day you stood before Hashem in Chorev. So here, if not for the Medrash, there are different opinions how to understand Pshat in the Pasuk. Some want to say the desert was called Chorev, the area was called Chorev. You know, you could have the name of the country, the name of the state, the name of the city, the name of the town, the name of the county. You can have a lot of names that they don't contradict. They could sometimes be encompassing. But the Medrash explains it this way. Rabbi Pinchas omer erev Shabbat amdu Yisrael bar Sinai aruchim. Rabbi Pinchas says it was Friday. The Jews were standing at Sinai, charged. They're ready. They're prepared. Ha'anashim levad v'anashim levad. Men separately, women separately. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu leMoshe, God said to Moshe, lechem or livnot Yisrael. Go talk to the women. Im rotzot lekabel ta Torah. Ask them, do they want to accept the Torah? Why does God talk to the women first? Shedarkam shel anashim olechim achar da'atan shel nashim. The way of men is that they end up espousing their wives' ideas. They end up going after their wives' opinion. So God says to Moshe, go talk to the women first. Sheneimar kotmal levet Yaakov. This is how you should speak to the house of Yaakov. That's why they call the girls' schools Beis Yaakov. Because Beit Yaakov traditionally, Elu Anashim. That's a reference to the women. Who is the house of Yaakov? The house is the women. V'tagid livnei Yisrael, then go tell the Jewish people, Elu Anashim, that's the men. V'anu chulam te'echad, and they all said in unison, kol asher diber Hashem nasev nishma. Whatever God says we will do, we will perform and listen. The truth is that we shouldn't just pass on this point. The Talmud tells us an interesting point, a halachic point. Let's say a Jewish girl has to stay at an inn. And let's say she's on a train, right? So you get a room, there are three beds, she gets one bed. And the other two beds, well, one's going to be a man and a woman, and they're a couple, they're married. So is there a problem of yichud or not? Are we worried that he might do something improper? So the Talmud says, if he's a non-Jew, he might, his wife's there, yeah, he won't be embarrassed. He'll do whatever he wants in front of his wife. If he's a Jew, even if he doesn't obey mitzvot, he's not going to do it in front of his wife. So it's very interesting. If a girl has to be in a room, she has to take a room in a train, right? So we're on a boat. So that happens sometimes, that they give you one bunk and there are another two bunks in the room. Is she permitted to be alone in the room if the other inhabitants are a couple, a man and a wife? Does the wife prevent the problem of yichud? Do we assume that because his wife is there, he won't do anything improper with her? So the Talmud says, if it's a Jew, then he will behave, and if it's a non-Jew, then you don't know if he'll behave. So we have to remember where are we coming from. The Talmud says that in the days of the Talmud, the rabbis wouldn't want to partake of a wedding meal where the daughter of a Talmud Chacham married an Amoretz. Why? Because the way of the Amoratzim, if a person wasn't learned, the Talmud says, we know how they behave to their wives. He's capable of beating her and then demanding intimacy from her. So the rabbis didn't approve of a man beating his wife, but the people who weren't learned weren't listening to the rabbis. So the Talmud says, you marry off your daughter to someone who's not learned, so we don't want to partake of such a wedding meal, because who says you're doing something good to your daughter? Maybe he's going to beat her. And obviously the rabbis didn't approve, right? But he's not going to listen to us. So on the one hand, the whole world was beating their wives. I mean, it was common practice. The pilgrims had all kinds of laws about what a wife deserves depending on what she does to her husband. I mean, up until 100 years ago, a woman couldn't own land, couldn't vote. Come on. So you guys know world history. You guys hear that? That was the law. No. at any rate, it's not what it says in the Rambam. If you don't know how to read Rambam, then you could misread Rambam. I know what it says in the Rambam, and that's not what it says in the Rambam. I know what you're referring to, and I'm telling you that's not what it says. What it says in the Rambam is that one Jew is responsible for his fellow Jew. And if a fellow Jew is doing something that is improper, you have to try and ensure that they don't do it. Sometimes it could reach the point where you can stand in his way with a stick and hit him. The Rambam says it about a husband and a wife too, but it's not that the husband could stand in his wife's way with a stick more than the wife could stand in the husband's way with a stick. The Rambam isn't saying, you know, he's going to beat her up if she wants to go and eat pork. Well, if he wants to go and eat pork, then she could beat him up too. The Rambam wasn't saying specifically that a husband can beat his wife. The Rambam was describing that we all have mutual responsibility, and there can be instances where we would stand in a person's way from doing a sin to the point of picking up a stick. And that the Rambam wasn't saying it more about a husband and a wife than a wife and a husband or any other relationship, as you see from only someone who doesn't know what he's talking about would read the Rambam that way. Why don't you check? Don't believe everything you hear. Let me put it to you this way. When I started learning, someone showed me this Rambam, and I told him he's off his rocker, he doesn't know how to read Rambam. And then I continued learning, and I still think he's off his rocker. But the more I learn, the more I see that people who don't know what they're talking about are willing to quote Rambam. If you start, you're starting out, you're it's not your fault. But don't believe what people quote.
So you think they'll believe themselves entering just by quoting Rambam?
I told you what the Gemara says. I told you what the Rambam says. I told you what it says in Halacha. It says we don't even partake of a wedding where we think the husband might be abusive to his wife. We don't even consider it a sudas mitzvah. Chazal forbade marrying one's daughter to someone who might beat her. So what more do you want than that?
So when you talk about a Jew being in a wagon with another person, you know, not to have yichud, or
yichud. Oh, so that's where we're headed. One second.
A Jew, but a Jew that has Torah.
No, so that's exactly my point.
You're talking about Hamaaretz, you're talking about a Jew with no Torah. So what's the
so that's exactly. That's where I'm headed. So the Talmud recognizes that there were Jews who were not learned, and those same Jews were capable of beating their wives. Now you tell me, if you'd look at that, you'd say, okay, a guy that's beating his wife obviously is also capable of doing other things in front of her, and there should be a problem of yichud. That's what I would say. It's not what the Talmud says. The Talmud says that he's not going to do it. Either he's not going to do it, or she's not going to let him get away with it, even though he's not learned. If he's a Jew, she's allowed to be in the room and sleep with them in the same room. If he's a non-Jew, then nope. Think about it, Bezalel. Think for a minute. What did we just say?
We said that even if a Jew...
I don't mean the words. I mean the concept. I know you could repeat the words. I think that I only brought this concept back for our Midrash. The Midrash says that when the Torah was given, Hashem said to Moshe, first go to the women, then go to the men. Because
so
the...
Seems that this girl was holding on the woman that will not allow the husband to do something proper because there was a third person there. Even if she was an artist.
Right.
So she was holding on the woman and not on the man.
Okay, fine.
So we can say that Torah was being holding by the women.
Fine. We'll bring one more illustration of this concept. It says that when King David was in the beginning of his reign, so there was a point where there was a descendant of King Saul who took the throne. So at one point, King Saul's son got into a fight with his chief general, Avner ben Ner, and the chief general decided, you know what, you're fighting with me, I'm giving over the people to King David. So he went over to David and said, I'm going to bring everyone over to your side. That's it. I've had it. You're right. You're going to be king. And he goes out and he goes en route to summon all the elders and all the Jewish people to be under King David. Along comes David HaMelech's nephew, Yoav ben Tzruya. Yoav, the son of David's sister Tzruya. And he hears about it and he has an issue because Avner, the general on King Saul's side, who was now going to make a treaty, Avner had killed Yoav's brother in a previous battle. So Yoav calls him over and kills Avner. Kills Avner, takes him in front of the court, asks him, why'd you kill my brother? Avner says, he was chasing after me, he was threatening to kill me. Yoav says, Well, you could have maimed him. You didn't have to kill him. Yoav says, I couldn't. I was on a, Avner says, I couldn't. I was on the run. Yoav says, you aimed so perfectly that with one shot you killed him flat. Don't tell me you couldn't have aimed better. If you could aim so well to kill him, you could have knocked him in the leg and maimed him that way. What'd you have to kill him for? And he takes him to court. At the end of the day, he kills him. Now, David HaMelech was a minute away. Mamash. What? Right, that happens a few days later. Yeah, that's how one opinion in the Talmud. One opinion in the Talmud is that yeah, the court sided with Yoav.
David HaMelech had to have Yoav sent to his grave in blood because of killing him.
Good question, but one second, we brought this for a different point. The story we will learn in our Shmuel class, but the it says now David HaMelech is stuck. In the following scenario, he just told the people that he's going to make a pact and accept all those people who had been fighting him until now, he'll accept them back. Now their chief general had just been murdered by his chief general. What message does that send to the rest of the Jewish people? No one can make up with David. Because you see, someone came and tried to make up with him and his nephew came around and killed him. That's what's going to happen to anyone else who tries to make up with David. So there's a danger of civil war re-erupting. He was just on the verge of closing it. He was on the verge of ending the civil war, the civil strife. And when Yoav kills Avner, now every Jew has to think to himself, I don't stand the chance to make peace with David. So when they bury Avner, the Navi writes that David started weeping bitterly and lamenting and saying a terrible thing. They tried to give him tea. He said, I'm not eating till sundown. A terrible thing happened today. A pious Jew passed away. So yeah, it's true. A pious Jew passed away. But David was doing a political act here. He had to make sure that everyone knew he had no hand in this assassination. The Navi describes that David, when he was doing this whole thing, weeping bitterly, he kept walking in front of the casket and behind the casket, in front of the casket and behind the casket. So the Talmud discusses, how does a funeral procession go? Are the women in front and the men in back? Are the men in front and the women in back? And the Talmud says, women in back, men in front, so the men don't spend the whole funeral procession looking at the women. Fine. So then Talmud says, well, why was David going from the men to the women, from the men to the women? Now that we see this medrash, we know the answer. David knew that it wasn't enough for him to convince the men that he didn't have a hand in assassinating Avner. They'll come home and their wives will say, you bought that? You really believe David? And that's it. All his work was over. He knew if he wants to succeed, he has to get the women to believe. So he went back to the women and wept bitterly. That's what the Talmud says. He went to the front, he went to the back. He had to ensure the men and the women believed him. So now that we see this medrash, we understand why. Even when the Torah was given, Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, first talk to the women. You got them, you got the men. You don't got the women, you don't got the men. That's what the medrash just said. So that's a concept we see often in Judaism, and this is a concept that I think I told you guys the story. I was once meeting with a multimillionaire to get a donation for an organization, and we had an excellent rapport. And when it came time to write the check, he said to me, "You convinced me, but you didn't convince her." So he told me, "In the future, you got to work the other way." Now, out of modesty, I never had anything to do with her. But I said, okay, so I give up, goodbye. I didn't get a penny, no. We were still good friends. I mean, I used to bring my camp. He had a museum in his backyard. He was convinced. We were good friends. So he would give a tour to my camp, a free tour of his museum. He had a whole museum of Jewish artifacts and stuff like that. So we were on good terms. So that he did. But a donation for this organization, I never got, no. Okay, fine. But he taught me the lesson. Chazal say the lesson right here in the Medrash. Yeah, yeah.
In the Talmud, why does it depend on the man if he's a Jew or not? Why not on both?
I guess that she's not going to control him enough if it's not. I guess it takes two to tango.
Is that the Gemara talks about explains David as trying to convince the people?
Yeah. Gemara in Sanhedrin in the second chapter. Yeah. Okay.
Wait. So What's the deal with David trying to put the Yoav in the grave? He went to the court?
That's an excellent question for when we get there in Shmuel, not even for a Thursday night. What? Back to...
First of all, there's no time in the class that we don't use.
That's not true. I'm sorry. If you've attended the classes this year, anytime guys want, we go in depth.
Yeah.
This year is different, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
We have an invitation to...
back to the Medrash. ואומר ושרים כחוללים כל מעייני פח. The Medrash is quoting a pasuk that they sang, and the Medrash is alluding to a different Medrash that says that there were two songs taking place. There was the men's section and the women's section, just like when we left Egypt, also at the receiving of the Torah. Rabbi Chachinai Omer b'chol shashishi ayom kaful kalayla. What month did we get the Torah in? We got the Torah in the third month, Nisan Iyar Sivan. Nisan is the equinox, the day and the night are equal. Iyar Sivan, then you're reaching a point where the day is twice as long as the night. Think about that. Do we ever have a day that's twice as long as the night? We have a 16-hour day and an 8-hour night? So from here, the Gra wants to prove how we calculate the days and the nights. When the question of Shots Maniot. Okay.